Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have a great one tonight. We have a Canada show, a truce with Canada. So we have Jordan Bonaparte is filling in for Alejandro Rojas, who actually became ill today, and he wrote me just a few minutes ago saying he can't make the show. So I have Jordan Bonaparte from Canada. Our guest also, MJ Benias, is also from Canada. So we'll call this the Canadian Truce Show. And I want to thank everyone that supports the show. We are over on KGRA Radio, and we are also on YouTube, and we are live on our website, which is podcastufo.com. And anyone wants to go check that out, there are some blogs over there. We're looking for a blog writer, if anyone's interested in doing that. And so check out podcastufo.com. Also, there's a mailing list there, so you can see what our upcoming guest is. We do not abuse the mailing list. We only send out once a week with the upcoming guests and also the times that the show is live. And speaking of that, next week, my guest should be, if his car doesn't break down, is Chris O'Brien. He's going to be heading out. He's going to stay at my guest house. We're going to do a in-studio show here next week. That should be fun. Chris is a lot of fun. And our guest tonight is MJ Benias. We're going to talk a little bit more about him when we get ready. I want to thank everyone that supports the show. Anyone can do that. And that information is on podcastufo.com. And Jordan, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for filling in.
Well, when duty calls, Martin, I'm here for you, buddy.
I know. This is like the Canadian, last minute.
You call it a Canadian truce, but it's me and MJ against you. So this is more like a takeover.
Oh, no.
I couldn't turn that opportunity down.
Yeah. We'll talk about tariffs when MJ gets on. but anyway, thanks so much for filling in. And I know this is last minute. Did you get a chance to check out any UFO news to bring us today?
Yeah, well, really what I see discussed online in terms of UFO news for the last few days, maybe this isn't a UFO story and it's a little political, but there's been a lot of talk among UFO circles about Trump's recent announcement to form the Space Force. Right. I've seen, of course, conspiracy theories that his attention to the Space Force may have undercurrents within the UFO culture, but I don't know. I would love to sit down and talk to him about his thoughts on this, but there's something going on up there that has him concerned, it seems.
Well, yes, I saw when he was doing this a little bit about it that it's he wants it as a part of the armed forces, actually, which is pretty interesting. And I know that nothing can be done without congressional approval, but it still is interesting that he actually has interest in space. So, a little while ago, there was an announcement that we can go back to the moon, which I think is awesome. I think that would be great to get back there and see what's happened in the so many years ago. I think it was 1972 or 73 is the last time we're on the moon. So,
yeah, his announcement was to make it the 6th division of the Department of National Defense. I think I love the idea of money and attention and science being directed towards the sky, but I think I would rather it be spent in a different way than, you know, defense and military. I wish it was more just towards exploration, but I don't know what his plans are or what his concerns are regarding our safety and in the sky. But I guess any money spent towards that, well, I shouldn't say that. I would like to say any money spent towards that means is a good thing for those of us who are interested in this. But that said, there's probably some nasty things you could do by building a space force or arming a space force.
Well, I know there's like the Moon Treaty or something like that. I know I looked into it quite a while ago, so I'm not really up on it. But I know that the moon is not supposed to be used in any way for any type of military or any other for anything other than exploration. I think there's some type of treaty that we signed, and I know it's against the Star Wars thing that came up when Reagan was in, against all that. I mean, if we start like arming ourselves in the in space, I think that who knows what that'll lead to. So I think being prepared is good, but arming in space, I don't know exactly if that's such a good idea. It's only going to breed more possible conflict, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just felt like in our past, there was a bit of course, it was the whole Space Wars program, but there was a lot of competition among the different world's powers to go into space more so as in an exploratory fashion, you know, the race to the moon and these sorts of things. I love that idea, but the arms race in the sky is a bit darker of something to think about, and it's maybe something that's better off left in science fiction works. But that said, you know, safety is important, being prepared for something in the future. You know, there's a lot of different satellites and things going on up there that I'm sure there's a national security concern, you know, behind all this. But I'd be curious to hear a more casual explanation of what the plans are, and maybe that's something that'll come out in the future. But I prefer to think that Donald Trump caught wind of an oncoming UFO invasion, or maybe he saw some upcoming Tom DeLonge video that Tom hasn't released to us yet, and you know, and this got Trump's back up against the wall. So okay, we'll see. I mean, maybe it'll be an exciting month.
Yeah. Well, I know that's your sense of humor. A lot of people are going to take you serious on that. But I think there probably should be protocols. You know, so far, nothing has really, as far as we know, has attacked us in any type of way, at least in the last, you know, million years. But anyway, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to have some preparation to address something in case, you know, we did have hostile incoming, it would be not a bad idea to have something lined up. Just, I don't know what, if we could possibly even protect ourselves, you know, if they could get here, who knows what they could do. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's to prepare for a threat as vague as, you know, extraterrestrial invasion. It would be a little tricky that I have a hard time believing that that's what his concern is, or the government's concern is with, you know, with the Space Force. But, you know, a lot of people, if you run in some of the same circles online that I do, and you read kind of some of the thoughts people have about extraterrestrial life and its interaction with our world, you know, there's probably a lot of people who think that we should be prepared and should be arming to defend ourselves when the time inevitably comes. But I guess I just haven't seen evidence of that yet.
Right. Do you have anything else that you were able to look at before the show?
You know, there wasn't. Yeah, as I browsed through the news, and really I haven't seen a lot. Here in Canada, what I'm thinking about is the upcoming Shag Harbor UFO Festival. The 51st anniversary is coming up. We had a great time there together last year, Martin. I don't imagine
great.
you plan to go through that again.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I would never, ever do, and that's I would never, ever, ever drive again from Maine.
You know, yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
That's a long drive, and you had your little dog in the car, so yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. It seemed like it was 1,600 miles, or maybe it wasn't that long, but it sure felt like it. No, that's not going to happen. I assume, because it's not too far away from you, right?
No, just a couple hours. I'll definitely be there, and they got a great lineup this year. Chris Rutkowski, who's a friend of your upcoming guest, MJ's, is going to be speaking there, and really looking forward to that, because he's, in my opinion, Canada's top researcher of the UFO phenomenon. He publishes the Canadian UFO Survey each year, where he compiles the statistics of the year's reports. So I'm really excited to see him speak. Chris Stiles, who is kind of the man behind the Shag Harbor UFO incident, will be there again this year. So it's going to be a great time. But an idea that I had for you, Martin, you often talk about having people staying in your guest house, and you know, and you talk about it a lot. I know you have a beautiful property there. You should plan a little festival right in your property. You have your guest house. You could probably have, you know, 30, 50 people up there stargazing.
Well, I do. I actually do have, like, the place. Part of the place was used for conferences, and there's a big ballroom. The only problem is the ceiling fell in, so that's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, that is.
Anyway, it is
problem.
Fixed, but still. It still needs a lot of work, but yeah, it's something I thought of briefly, but I'm not sure if I'll ever do something like that. But good thoughts anyway.
You can even have you could even have a journalist version where you have different journalists live streaming, and you could have it almost like a web conference where people, your listeners from around the world could attend via the internet. And you could have podcasters, journalists. Wow. You could have Alejandro there.
Yeah. Well, you're the thinker, that's for sure. So I really appreciate you coming on. I know it was such short notice, and I really do appreciate you coming on. And when is that up in Canada? It's another 2 months, right?
Yeah, I think it's the first week of August, I believe. I wish I knew the date off the top of my
August?
Head, but it's
yeah.
It's, I think they're having it at the beginning of August. It's all online. If you just Google Shag Harbor UFO Festival, you'll find the schedule and whatnot. So it's all there.
All right. Excellent. Okay, Jordan. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, especially
anytime,
the last
Martin.
Minute. I mean, just a couple of minutes ago, it seems like I called you. So anyway, thanks.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
All right. You take care.
Have a great time with MJ. He's awesome.
All right. Thank you. All right. So our guest, MJ Banias, he is a writer, a blogger, and who critically, philosophically examines the weird, the strange, and the anomalous. And he's got a book he's putting together. We're going to be talking about that coming right up. So how you doing? How are you doing, MJ?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Thank you. And thanks so much for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. I got to be honest. This is one of my favorite UFO podcasts. And I was really surprised when you took the leap and joined KGRA. Well done. Mazel tov.
Well, thank you. Yes, one of the things I've always wanted to do, it's been important, is to try to, you know, get as much of an audience as I can out there.
Yep.
And I had thought about it for quite a while, and I can't believe I'm actually simulcasting. I didn't know that could be done, but on YouTube, it's a great thing. It's not really that much more work.
Nope.
So it's all good. So for the person, let's see, I think you were on about 10 months ago, last time you were on. And so this is your second visit. But for the person that is not aware of who you are, would you mind filling everyone in?
Sure. Yeah, I'm just a humble UFO writer, blogger, journalist. I write for Mysterious Universe. I have my own blog at terraobscura.net. My interest in UFOs has been sort of is very old, and I've loved it since I was a kid. But right now, the big project for me has been my first book. So that's sort of been where I've been hiding for, I think, the last year or so.
Oh, and can you tell us, you did tell me a little bit about it, but go ahead and tell the listener, if you would, what that's about.
Sure. My book is really about the UFO subculture, the UFO community. That's really what my interest is. I'm all, you know, UFOs are fascinating, but for me, I think the people who make up the community that sort of engages with the UFO phenomenon, that for me is really sort of the more fascinating thing. So my book is basically, exploring different aspects of the subculture. I have sort of various interviews and individuals who have spoken to me and told me their stories. And basically, I'm sort of taking on trying to develop a bit of a framework for how the UFO subculture functions and how it looks and what it is, basically. Hopefully sort of original and the first of its kind.
Well, I think, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, say, for instance, pop culture and UFOs. And so I'm sure it kind of follows along that. But and people have talked about, you know, kind of almost like a religious aspect to it and almost a cult following. And I do think you do actually see that in certain circumstances, that there's, you know, like a cult following. And I'm not, you know, I'm not pointing any fingers or anything. It's just, it does seem like there is part of that going on out there.
No, I agree. I think the subcultures, it's incredibly complex. And there's a lot of nuance. And I think really, when we try to define, you know, who's a member of the subculture or who's a member of the community, it's very difficult to draw those lines and distinctions, especially since there's really no ivory tower, or there's no sort of established university, or there's no sort of establish, I guess, paradigm that sort of says this is what the UFO subculture is, and it sort of it's encapsulated and that's it. That doesn't exist. A colleague of mine, Ryan Sprague, who's a UFO podcaster and author, he sort of said, if you want to become a ufologist, what do you say, spin around three times and touch your nose, and you are one, right? So it's one of those things where we're sort of trapped in this weird world where we can't really draw a distinction or a line as to who's a member and who isn't, and this is sort of what this book tries to address.
I seem to get a lot of people that contact me that want to be on the show that I would consider really far out on the fringe. And, you know, and I've had a few people on that are kind of out there, and I kind of let, you know, the listening audience take it up. But I've noticed an upsurge in people contacting me, trying to get on the show, that, you know, claim that they've been, you know, living among aliens or on another planet, or they are, you know, star children or, you know, things like that. It just seems like it seems to be growing. Are you noticing any trends for what's been happening, or any upsurge or anything?
You know, I think that this has sort of always existed. I think what's become obviously more prevalent is, you know, just the rise of the internet has allowed anyone to sort of tell a story. And really parsing through all of those individuals and trying to figure out, you know, where do we draw the line of truth, and where do we draw the line of just total nonsense, is, again, really difficult. And a lot of it, like, you know, like you mentioned before, it sort of comes down to sort of a more religious or theological sense. You know, a lot of it boils down to belief. Do you, you know, as a podcaster and a host, believe in their story? Because fundamentally, they won't have any evidence really to present to you that suggests they are star children, or they've been living with aliens on Mars, or, you know, with the reptilians or on the other side of the moon. Ultimately, they're not going to be able to provide this apart from an anecdote. And you know, this is sort of good and bad, right? And this is maybe the beauty of the UFO subculture, in that it's sort of total anarchy. It's a total chaotic mess and a total chaotic system where... you can't really delineate, I guess, sort of truth from fiction all the time. I think, you know, common sense often will apply, and we'll make judgment calls based upon common sense. But, man, you know, you can't, they can't prove it, and you can't disprove it. And it's sort of strange and weird and beautiful all at the same time, I think.
Yeah, I know you mentioned Ryan earlier, and I know his book was kind of along the line of this, you know, basically exploring the psychology of the whole phenomena. And, you know, I have to keep myself in check, you know, when I think about this whole topic as well. And, you know, I try not to go out too far on the limb. But I also try to be open-minded. But I have not followed anyone, and that's the part where I think when people, there's a difference between a fan and someone following someone, I believe. And I have seen there are people that kind of have risen to the top of this field in certain ways. And some of them being a little bit fringe, and they have people defending them, which is very cult-like in a way.
Indeed. And I mean, I have to be honest, you know, as a podcaster, and again, I've had this conversation with Ryan on his show, but as a podcaster, as someone who has to, you know, generate an audience, you know, often we have to be careful sort of what we say, right? Because ultimately, if you alienate someone who has a big following, even though, you know, we could probably debate, you know, whether they're committing fraud or not, you take a big risk. And I have to be honest, I mean, you know, you're going to have a whole assortment of audience members today, I'm sure, that I will probably say something and I will make someone upset because I said that their favorite UFO expert or guru or channeler or... who knows, is full of it. I don't want to, but sometimes it comes out.
Yes.
you can't run that risk, right? Because ultimately the subculture dictates whether, you know, people listen to you or not. And like you said, they have these cult-like followings, and they can muster a lot of people to come after you and put you down and create fake Facebook accounts and troll you and all that stuff.
Yeah, which is quite amazing. Yes, anyone that follows my YouTube channel will see that there's, you know, I have a few trolls after me, have been, and I just don't let it bother me. I just have them, as long as they're not saying anything racial or like slandering any of my guests. I usually don't even bother to look at too many of the comments. Unfortunately, I just feel like it's not a place I really want to go.
No, and do not engage, right? Don't engage. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. So, but anyway, everyone is welcome to their opinion, but sometimes it makes me wonder why someone gets so upset over something minor when they do.
Well, I think that's kind of that's one thing the UFO subculture lends itself very well to is opinion and speculation. And that's fine. I think speculation is great. I think it's awesome that we can sit here and have literally philosophical conversations about the nature of the universe or the nature of anomalous phenomena. Or sort of esoteric concepts. I think that's great. I think when we start making truth claims, though, and when we start saying, you know, the UFO phenomenon is X or this event over here is Y, without any evidence or without any concrete data to back it up, I think we run into problems. And I think that this is where we sort of see this shift in the subculture, like you mentioned earlier, you know, are we noticing this uptick? I think you're getting a lot of individuals who are saying a lot of things and making a lot of claims that they are suggesting are true. And unfortunately, people are buying into it, right? You know, there's snake oil salesmen, and there's a lot of stupid people who are willing to buy that snake oil as well. And unfortunately, you can have someone, for example, say, I have no evidence to support my claim, but I was a soldier on Mars, and I time traveled, and, you know, all of this stuff. And provide no data whatsoever or evidence to back it up, and people believe them and will buy their stuff and support them and donate to their cause and you know, give them money up through Patreon or whatever, and watch their show on Gaia, and ultimately produce a lot of noise, whereupon the signal, such as your show, I think, gets lost, right? There's a lot of crap out there, and...
Sent me the email last week?
Which email?
No, I'm just saying all the stuff you just said as a joke. I'm just joking with you. So we're ready
Join
to go.
My cult.
What's that?
Yeah. Join my cult. Yeah.
So we are ready to go into a break. We are on with MJ Banias, and we're going to go on this break, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. And we are on Podcast UFO and KGR Radio. And again, my guest is MJ Manias. We'll be right back.
All right, gentlemen, we're clear. Three minutes and 40 seconds in this break, Martin.
3 minutes and 40 seconds.
So you were real close, you betcha.
Oh, wow. Okay.
MJ, great commentary, man. That was spot on.
Oh,
it's always
much.
Refreshing to hear good common sense on these airwaves here.
Thanks very much. I can't imagine it's easy with running KGRA. You probably get a lot of interesting characters.
Well, he's gone. He didn't go.
I'm here. I got to be honest with you. There's times where I'm ready to just start jamming pencils in my ears.
Yeah.
But the, I'll just say it, you know, the Corey Goods, the David Wilcox, the, you know, the Basaggio, that none of them are ever going to find a place here.
No, but there are some of their fans might, right? And that's the inherent problem.
Yeah.
Like, you still have a business to run. At the end of the day, you still have a business to run, right?
Yep. It's hard it's hard to keep everybody happy. It's just, I don't think you can do it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, last week we had Dr. Bob Gross on, who had his theory on Kecksburg, and he had a theory also on Roswell, and boy, have I got a lot of email about that. So,
what was his theory?
His theory is that he thought it was, now there was some type of balloon that was coated with aluminum and like a precursor to Mylar PET. I don't remember the long name of it. So he was basically thinking that it was that actually crashed. And actually, it was pretty convincing. But since that time, there's been a couple blogs have come out with punching holes and saying that he used selective evidence for that.
Well, it's like this: the United States Air Force. I think it was in 96, was it?
Yeah, something like
that. They came out with this big, thick explanation that had nothing to do with it.
Right.
I mean, developing Mylar technology back then might have been a really big thing, which I don't think it was so much. But, why wouldn't they just come clean with that today when the shit's everywhere? It just didn't make any sense. I'm back here chewing a hole through my seat. You know what I mean? I just want to open this mic up and say, look, man, but I can't do it. I got to sit back and just let these guys do their thing. But
well, everyone's hearing you on YouTube now, just to let you know, and my podcast.
Well, good, because
keep the conversation clean. I'm safe for work.
Okay. Thank you for that. But, it makes me wonder, why the U.S. Air Force would go through so much trouble to still cover up something that's everywhere now. It's not top secret. It's not something that needs to be held back.
Or they just don't care. Like, they're just not talking about it because, like, literally they just don't care about it. If Roswell was... Okay, see, I don't want to upset anyone, but let's, just for the sake of argument, let's say Roswell is nothing more than Mylar balloon technology that's beyond, what it was in 1947.
I think we have only 20 seconds left, right?
Okay, well, they're not going to come in and they're not going to be like, hey, well, this is actually what it was, and they're going to try and disprove it because they know that nothing's going to happen. At the end of the day, if they came out and said it's Mylar, it's this advanced technology you had in 47, do you think the UFO community would suddenly be like, oh, yeah, no, they're right. You're right. That's fine. We accept this answer as the truth.
Agreed, but that was an awful big report that came out to cover up plastic.
Right. True. Right.
I'll give you that.
So we're going back
We're 39 seconds away.
39 seconds? Okay.
39 seconds.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. It was an interesting theory. And, it's another theory. And that's, I think that's the name of one of the blogs, another theory out there. Look, Ryan's in the chat room. Hey, Ryan. Ryan Sprague.
I love him. Brother Ryan.
Yep, that's right. So he's... we'll have to say hi to him. And we can take calls. Hopefully the calls will be working. We can take them at the top of the hour. Before the break, you were talking about different aspects of, we were talking about the different cult-like aspects of this. Not to really name any names up, I have actually named a name on this show before, Stephen Greer, that has caused me a lot of trouble. So, I think on any aspect, like if you go into different parts of paranormal, I'm sure it's the same thing. What is your aspect of this book only focusing on the UFO topic, or is it other aspects as well?
Yeah, it primarily focuses on the UFO community. The problem is there's so much, sort of bleed through in regards to the paranormal community in general, or just sort of other esoteric concepts that'll often blend into the UFO community. So I've been really struggling to try and sort of delineate it. But at the end of the day, I just don't know if you can all the time. And I think that trying to is making a lot of work for yourself. Or you have to leave certain ideologies and paradigms out of the UFO debate that you just don't want to do if you're doing sort of what I'm doing, which is just a sort of a framework for the subculture. I can't say, people who experience poltergeist activity alongside UFO sightings, I can't keep the UFO sighting but get rid of the poltergeist activity, right? Because that's their story. So I have to be sort of kind of open to the possibility that the UFO phenomenon is more than just sort of an extraterrestrial sort of physical nuts and bolts, I guess, idea. but it may involve aspects of the mystical or sort of interdimensional or psychosocial or whatever. So I try to encapsulate sort of all of it. But the book isn't just the book isn't really trying to map the subculture. I think that's a task that's impossible. I mean, you can't really do that with any subculture. You can't really sort of say this is it, because ultimately those subcultures change quite quickly over time, and in a short amount of time. So the book is more about trying to figure out how the subculture functions. And I think one way to look at it, and the way I try to look at it in my book, is that sort of people within the UFO subculture have sort of their feet in two worlds. On the one hand, we go about our daily lives. We buy Starbucks. We go to work. We raise our kids. We cut our grass. And we sort of function like that. We shop at Walmart. On the other side, we have this strange, not fascination, but we have this strange connection, let's say, to this other world that we're told does not exist, right? We're told that UFOs are delusion, UFOs are all hoaxes, that UFOs are total nonsense. But for some reason, as a community, we don't necessarily listen to those messages, and we tend to, I don't want to use the term believe, but we tend to try to engage with that phenomenon in some way. We talk about it, we debate over it, we speculate, and sometimes we, you know, lecture at UFO conferences, and we develop cult-like environments, like your friend Dr. Greer. So we sort of exist in these this dualistic kind of world as a community, and the book tries to figure out how is that possible. How can we sort of go about our daily lives, yet at the same time believe in aliens or believe in interdimensional beings and believe in flying saucers or black triangles or wolves that can be shot at point blank range and not die from Knapp and Kelleher's book Hunt for the Skinwalker, right? Like these sort of odd paranormal phenomena that show up that don't make sense, yet we have no problem going to buy, you know, grass seed so we can keep our lawns looking nice and pretty, right? And I think that this is really the weirdness of the subculture. It's not the people who believe in extraterrestrials that are weird at all. It's the fact that we somehow continue to function in our lives with this, I guess, awareness or this idea that we are maybe not alone, at least in some way, in the cosmos or interdimensionally or mystically or spiritually or whatever.
So do you find that there a difference between a person that has interest in this phenomenon just out of plain interest? Perhaps it started by science fiction or someone they know may have had a sighting or something like that. Is there a difference between that person and the person like myself that actually had an unexplained sighting?
Right. And again, this is another sort of inherent problem, right? Which I sort of outline in the book is what is the UFO community? Can we say someone who just, you know, watches Ancient Aliens is not a member versus someone who's had an experience is a member? Because the problem is, I would say there's a lot of experiencers out there who would say they're not members at all. They've experienced something strange, something anomalous. They saw a UFO. Maybe they had a contact or abduction experience, but they have chosen to never engage with the discourse. They've chosen never to engage in the UFO debate, and they've just walked away from it.
Yes.
Are they members or are they not members? So what is really the important aspect here versus someone who just watches Ancient Aliens and posts on Facebook and has forum discussions and engages with that discourse, even though their sort of source material is typically flawed? What would they then maybe be part of that discourse more so? You know, like we sort of dance around these issues, and I think that it's difficult to delineate who is in and who is not in. That is really the problem.
Wow. We have some questions coming in from the chat, and I'll get to one of them. But first of all, I just wanted to tell you quickly, and I have told this story before on this show, but it still kind of blows my mind. I'm friends with someone that's on the Antiques Roadshow, so he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about his experience. But when he was in college at Amherst, he was in there's some towers. The dorms are in like these towers, and he was like on the 23rd floor or something with a bunch of his buddies. He said, yes, we were drinking, but it wasn't a hallucination. He wasn't that drunk. He just had a little bit of a buzz on. And he said, this all of a sudden they noticed out this window this thing comes swooping in, and they looked at it, and it was shaped like a box, like a perfect box. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was like a square, almost like a cube, but rectangular. And it had lights flashing all around it. And then he said they were all just staring at it, and then it shot up in the sky. And he said just then a fighter jet went toward it, but before it could get anywhere near it, the thing burst into five lights. And he said the lights seemed to be reacting back and forth to each other. And then by the time the jet got close to it, he said the lights just shut off. He said so fast you couldn't hardly see it. So I said, my goodness. I said, how do you feel about that? I mean, that's amazing. Did it change your life? He said, I could give a, you know what? He says, I don't care. I could care less. And so there are those people. And so I think that's kind of interesting that you're kind of including those people as part of the subculture, or where do they fit?
And that's the problem, right? Like, we don't know where they fit. I think fundamentally, I would have to say that, you know, you should try, because you need to delineate somewhere, right? You need to have a line somewhere, but it's tough to find all the time. I think that if people communicate about it, right, if there is some sort of discourse or debate and they're engaging with that, then I think that they're part of the community, at least in some way. If they are not engaging at all, if they've had a strange experience like your friend and they've chosen to just say, forget it, I don't care, and they never talk about it again, they never even think about it, you know, can we say that they're part of the community? Can we say that they're part of the subculture? I think they're part of a community for sure, a community that's had an experience, or a community that, or a subculture that has had an anomalous experience. But I wouldn't say they're really part of the conversation. And I think the conversation is really what the UFO subculture is. It's the back and forth. It's the communication over the UFO phenomenon that is really what shapes the phenomenon in a way, right? We create our theories and our hypotheses, and that is really what kind of breathes life into it, because we can talk about it. If we didn't do any of that, we wouldn't have a UFO subculture at all, right? It's all about the communication.
Interesting. And how does this fit into, like, to say when people, the people that go to conferences, or they, you know, I mean, is that all part of this too? Like, someone puts out some money to actually travel and go and be there at these conferences?
For sure. I think that's a whole separate, I think that's a sort of a, another, that's a sub, that's a sub subculture. I think the UFO conference culture is a sort of a separate beast. It is part of the same thing. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it is part of the UFO subculture. But it's definitely its own kind of little version of it, I think. Because there's a lot of things that happen at conferences, and there's a lot of, I would say the communication of the UFO topic at a conference is like in hyperdrive there, right? Like, it's not just, you know, over the computer, it's not just over texting, or it's not just over Messenger, or it's not just over the phone, but you're actually interacting with individuals who have had anomalous experiences, or you're interacting with individuals who are engaged in investigation or constant discourse. So, yeah, it's a total separate thing. I gotta be honest, if I was gonna write a second book, I would go to every UFO conference I could and just write about that. Like, I think that would be, like, my next project would be to take the UFO subculture and, like, let's compartmentalize even more. And I want to do a book on conference culture, because I think it would be unbelievable. And it'd be crazy and wild. I mean, there's the people at those conferences, some of them, like, they dress up and they sell crystals and they, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I mentioned last week about how Roswell has become, you know, commercialized in a way. You know, I mean, it's such a, you know, and not only the once a year parade coming up in, what, a couple of weeks, but not only that, but, you know, the town itself, you know, restaurants being named after, you know, certain things, and, you know, spaceships on signs and stuff like that. And a lot of people are really, really into it.
Oh, I mean, Roswell's the town that it has a vested interest now in maintaining the fact that something strange happened there, right? Like, they cannot, even if there's an explanation that comes out and it's proven, they would have to fight against it, right? Because ultimately, economically, that the UFO crash at Roswell is Roswell, basically.
Yeah. Last week's guest would not fare well in that town walking down the street.
I wouldn't go. No, yeah.
So from the chat room, what are your thoughts on the co-creation hypothesis as presented by Greg Bishop? And how do you feel about the hypothesis that the hypotheses stand up for ETH and others? ETH.
I think we talked about this. This was the topic of our last talk, I think, when I was on last time, when we talked about co-creation a bit. So if you're asking me whether I believe co-creation is the answer, I think it's a pretty viable theory or a hypothesis. I don't know if it's an answer. My interest in UFOs is sort of, again, more around people and the culture and the community. But I've written sort of several articles about Greg Bishop's co-creation hypothesis as, I think, a good middle ground guess, I think. The problem with, you know, if we sort of zoom out on the UFO narrative and look at it from a bird's eye view, unfortunately, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, sort of as a nuts and bolts phenomena of, you know, a bunch of meat bodies jumping into a ship and flying here and doing stuff, I don't think it generally fits all the time with the entire narrative. Typically, if you want to go with ETH, you have to start leaving certain aspects out, or you have to start calling certain people sort of delusional or fakes or hoaxers or they're just too woo-woo, because ultimately their mythology or their ideology doesn't fit into the ETH paradigm. However, you know, on the flip side of that, there are aspects of the UFO phenomenon that are very material and physical, right? They tend to show up on radar every once in a while. They show up on gun camera footage now. They leave depression marks, or at least they used to. I haven't had actually a good UFO landing case in a while. You know, like, when's the last time a UFO landed in a field with, like, legs and stood? Anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
You know, like, when, yeah. So you at times have physical evidence or trace evidence, I guess you call it, left behind in sort of the UFO narrative. So I think co-creation tries to sort of find itself nicely in the middle between something that's more mystical and not immaterial or psychosocial. And something that's more nuts and bolts physical. And I think it tries to place itself in the middle, which is why I kind of like it. But again, one I guess, issue that I've since thought about in regards to co-creation is it comes off sometimes as a bit of like a theory of everything, sort of Hawking-esque theory of everything solution. And maybe the UFO phenomenon is not that. You know, maybe the UFO phenomenon is not one thing, but rather a smorgasbord of a whole bunch of things. Maybe we are dealing with a few nuts and bolts extraterrestrial ideas. Maybe we're dealing with some mystical or interdimensional hypotheses, and maybe we're dealing with some psychosocial, and maybe they're sort of coalescing or working together or just totally separate, and we're just experiencing it. So I think we also need to sort of think about whether we fit into the camp of there is one thing and that is the cause of all UFO experience, or are we dealing with a whole smattering of things that are just sort of coincidentally all occurring simultaneously for us? But yeah, I dig co-creation. I do.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I don't think there is if there's an answer out there to what, you know, people are seeing and witnessing. I don't think it's one thing. It just seems like there's too many variables in what right. people are experiencing to be just one thing. And so we are going to we have about less than 10 minutes to the break, and then after that we're going to take calls. So what about the abductee or experiencer, as they're mostly called now? What about that aspect of that? Is your book going to touch into any part of that?
A bit, for sure. You know, I've tried to tie in sort of as many different sort of ideas from the UFO narrative as I could. So I think I think UFO experiencers or contactees, abductees, I think they're sort of the most interesting. I think that really when we think about those people who have their foot now in two worlds, right? Someone who has had a contact experience or an abduction experience really now dwells in this weird in-between zone, this sort of no man's land, if you will, this gap between their daily lives and this life that has been totally, interrupted or disconnected from sort of the normal daily world. I mean, I can't imagine going about my business and then all of a sudden being abducted or having this amazing contact experience. I can't imagine how it would affect me.
No kidding.
It would, yeah. Right? So how do you then pick yourself back up? How do you then, you know, wake up the next morning and go, well, I'm going to get my, you know, venti latte from Starbucks? I mean, you probably can't, right? You've been the victim of something, or if it's a contact experience, you've been sort of enlightened in some way to the point where you sort of don't recognize the normal world as being real anymore. And I think that this is one thing that the UFO subculture often sort of engages in is realizing that sort of the daily reality you and I live in is not necessarily sort of true or objective, or I guess it could be objective, but it's not really sort of honest in a sense. If aliens are real, or if interdimensional beings are real, or if mystical, you know, non-human entities are roaming around in our, you know, universal consciousness, you know, paying your taxes or getting a mortgage seems ridiculous when, you know, we're potentially one species in a chorus of others that are intelligent. And how do we continue to live our lives? And when it comes to abduction and contact, I think this is sort of to the nth degree, right? This is really the big challenge. Can you go back to your old life, and does your old life seem normal, or are you sort of like Dorothy after the tornado, right? You've gone to Oz and now you're back, and life just seems sort of colorless, right? It doesn't seem real anymore. There's something wrong with it. And this is, I think, fundamentally where abduction contactee sort of individual experiencers sort of fit. They're Dorothy, and they've come back, and, you know, they're trying to figure out where the hell the color went.
I've said a number of times in the show, like, if the abduction experience was happening to me, I couldn't function. I just don't know how I could possibly, you know, go on with my life. And you know, by the way, someone's saying hi from Starbucks in the chat room. But I mean, how could you go to like Starbucks and just like live the normal life after something like that? I mean, I don't get it. If these people are truly being abducted, kudos to them for trying to fit in, because I certainly would have a hard time doing that myself.
Right. And I'm not going to sit here and say every single abduction case or every single contact case is legitimate, because we can't say that. I think that there's going to be plenty of frauds and plenty of hoaxers out there. You can't believe everybody, I suppose. But I would say that there's probably a good chunk of them that I would say are legitimate in some way. You know, again, I can't make a truth claim as to the source of the UFO phenomenon. So if a person was abducted, or if a person has a contact experience, I don't know what happened to them. You know, I'm not even sure if they know what happened to them. But whatever did happen to them, it's affected them. So to them, it's as real as possible, because ultimately they're the ones who have to sort of live their lives with this new understanding or this sort of new interpretation of the world.
And the strange thing is, it happens, you know, people are claiming this all over the world. And, you know, I mean, who do they confide in, you know, if they don't have anyone to talk to? I mean, it must be, you know, possibly it could be, some of them could be sleep paralysis. I don't want to step on any toes out there for, you know, because I do know that, you know, I mean, people have, they like see images of like beings, that's not uncommon in sleep paralysis, you know.
Sure. But I don't think you're going to step on any toes. I mean, ultimately, you know, we have to still remain critical. It's okay to ask people, you know, are you sure it's not sleep paralysis? Because ultimately, I have to be honest, I've actually had this conversation with my wife. Like, if I woke up one morning convinced I was abducted.
Really? Wow.
No. Oh, no. No, sorry. No. What I'm saying is if I did, like if I had that experience.
I thought for sure you said I did.
No. Okay. If I woke up one morning.
You heard it here, folks. Yeah.
If I woke up one morning thinking that I was abducted, I would hope that I would have sort of the wherewithal to sort of sit there and say, you know, maybe I should go see a psychiatrist first. You know, maybe I wasn't actually abducted. Maybe I had some sort of fugue state, or maybe sleep paralysis, or maybe there's something sort of, maybe there's sort of an error in my functioning, right? Because ultimately, that I think is a lot better than the reality that there's a species roaming around that has that just kidnaps people randomly for sort of various reasons, and does so without any ethical or moral issue, and just simply treats us as test subjects without our consent. I think that is much more frightening than me just, you know, losing my mind a little bit. So I think it's okay to be critical. I think we have to be critical. I think we can't sit here and say every single story is true. But again, we have to be cautious, because the inherent problem is no one can prove anything in this field. So I have to make a judgment call, I suppose. And we all have to make judgment calls. Who do we believe and who do we not believe? And this becomes problematic, because I mean, it's like you go to a UFO convention, you know, I'm going to say something here that's going to maybe hurt some feelings, but half the speakers up there that go up in lecture are full of nonsense and garbage, and they're there because it's a cottage industry, and they like the glory and the money, quote unquote, and just the attention. So
I think it's based more, if I had to pick between the two, I'd say it's more based on attention than it would be for the money, because there's no that's a misconception. There's no real money in this field, only for the, you know, for the ones that one person I mentioned earlier and a few others. You know, there's not really a lot of money, and we're about ready to go into break. So so why don't we do that? We're going to go into the break. And so you're listening to Podcast UFO. I'm Martin Willis, and my guest is MJ Benias. And we'll be right back right after this break.
And just over 3.5 minutes in this break, gang.
Okay, 3.5 minutes. Right. I'll set my timer. Thank you. So I'm not sure where you want to go when we come back, but we will start taking calls. It's hard to... hard to always guess how many calls we're going to get. Sometimes no one calls in. Sometimes we do get, you know, 3 or 4 calls. So
hey, I'm down for whatever. You know, if people want to give me a call, take it.
Yeah,
I enjoy it. Yep.
Yeah. Good. We talked a little bit this afternoon. So we have about 3 minutes left, and you were talking about the Nimitz pilot.
No, not the pilot. The radar.
That's right. The radar, that's right. Yeah. Daly's his name.
Day. Yeah, Kevin Day.
Kevin.
Yeah. Getting this all wrong.
Yeah. You're doing okay.
Yeah. He was on Phenomenon Radio Thursday night. Amazing guy.
And he was on Coast to Coast.
Sunday night.
2 nights ago? Yeah.
Sunday night.
Sunday, The Georgian app. Yeah.
We broke him Thursday night, though, on Phenomenon Radio. John Burroughs, working with some people, were successful in...
Oh, I heard about that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was an amazing interview. It wasn't so much like a classic interview like you would normally think. Guys, it was more like a couple of old, you know, military cats just sitting back talking about stuff, you know?
Yeah. I did listen to it. It's interesting, though. I mean, there's a lot happening in the background, I think, with this and especially with... maybe To the Stars a little bit and George Knapp, and I don't know, there's a whole backstory here that, you know, I don't know what's going on here, but he sounds
that's a part of it that might be a good part for you to research for your book, because outside of conferences, because, you know, people have a big misconception about conferences aren't a place where, you know, really sought after information is broke. It's where people get together and they commune. You know what I mean? That's what these conferences are. A chance for people to get close to the people that they admire and see them in person, just like a concert, a musical concert, or, you know, one of these, Antique Roadshow things that, you know, like Martin does. I mean, they're fans of that. I'm a fan of Antique Roadshow, for the love of it. But at the end of the day, you know, there is a group of people that will never see the light of day, will never do media. They'll never come forward. They've worked behind the scenes for 40, 50 years on this.
Yeah.
And they use proxies, if you will, people that they can convey to and they can disseminate information when they want it to get out. But you're very right about, you know, sort of this moving and shaking behind the scenes. I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, Kevin Day is an interesting story. I mean, ultimately, he wrote a book where he fictionalized this event.
And
about 7 years ago, he wrote the book. I think it was 2010, where he tells this story. Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, I believe he was there. I believe he's the real deal. I have no qualms there. It's just, it's interesting that sort of there's this whole backstory. If you start going to archives of for the Above Top Secret website, you can sort of find all of these old posts from him. And then he had a post, I think, in 2017 where he sort of came out and said something about it. And now he's sort of now, like you say, he broke on Phenomena Radio a few days ago. So
I think we're out of time, aren't we? Are we out of time?
Yeah, we're ready to go when you guys are.
Okay. So I wanted to tell you just real quickly, there's a friend of the show that had a series going on. It was called Milgram and the Fast Walkers. And basically, he was actually played a part in this miniseries. You can find it online. It's actually pretty good. And basically, it was a girl that was getting abducted and just had all the signs of it and just, you know, went to a therapist like you're talking about. A doctor first and then a therapist and all that. And I think that is like if someone is having this, you know, in their life and they can't really explain it, but they're just totally confused, I think you're right. I think starting with a therapist and maybe get some medical checks. But I'm wondering how many therapists out there actually, and I've heard that there are some that will refer people to someone like Yvonne Smith or something like that, you know, to do some regression, you know, hypno regression. What do you think about all that part of it?
Yeah, I think hypnotic regression has very, I think we bump into a lot of problems with it. I think there's a lot of allegations that hypnotic regression will create false memories, that often hypnotherapists will, whether on purpose or by accident, lead the client or to a certain set of beliefs about what happened. So I think we need to be cautious. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert in psychology, so I can't sort of comment too much, and I want to be careful. But I would say that if I suffered from sort of an event like this, I probably wouldn't want someone who's involved in the UFO subculture in any way to check me out. I wouldn't want to have that sort of set ideology be present in my mind as I'm, you know, being evaluated or being helped. The bigger problem though is I'm already part of the subculture, right? I'm already engaged in this this world. So if I have a strange sort of anomalous experience like an abduction or a contact event, you know, am I already going to kind of pull information that's already in my head about the UFO phenomena or about the UFO discourse and push it into, oh my God, I've been abducted, you know, whatever. I think really the more compelling cases of abduction and contact are people who are not part of the UFO community, at least not before they get abducted. I think that those are sort of the more interesting ones because ultimately they have nothing really to draw on. They have no paradigm that they use to say I was abducted by Grays or I was abducted by this or that. They just simply had an experience and they just sort of talk about it. So I don't know. The witness in my book that I sort of use a lot, that I sort of interview a lot, she was never a member of the UFO community before. I can't reveal too much, but she was a former flight attendant, lives on a farm now with her husband, just sort of living her daily life, and all of a sudden anomalous stuff started happening, and she reached out. So this was sort of a compelling case for me to investigate and look into. Now, she's never had an abduction, at least not that she can recall. She does have a few moments, I would say, of maybe what we could call missing time, but she has no recollection of anything sort of in that time. And she's also telling herself, you know, maybe I just screwed up on telling time, or maybe I just made a mistake, versus her, you know, going down that rabbit hole and telling herself, well, you know, clearly I've been abducted by something. So go ahead. Sorry, I really lost my train of thought there.
Yeah, you know, the missing time part of this is always, I always find that interesting, because people have talked about, you know, situations like that going way back. I mean, it's not a new thing. It's, you know, people have talked about it all the way back into the, you know, 50s.
Right. And I would say even longer. I mean, I think people, probably, you know, we probably have missing time cases of individuals. I know, I think it was brought up in either Valet's book, Passport to Magonia, of I think individuals who would sort of go into this sort of fairy land, and, you know, to them, they've been gone for 5 minutes, partying with, you know, these elves or whatever, and they come back and they've been gone for 5 years. So I think you have sort of missing time sort of mythology that's existed sort of for a long time in sort of the paranormal world, or in the, I guess, the mystical sort of monster / fairy world. I don't know what you call that, that sort of the mythological world, let's say.
Ah, that sounds good. That's a good
yeah
blanket. We are taking calls now. If anyone wants to call in, that number's up on the screen if you're listening to YouTube, and we will take calls if anyone wants to call in. Someone was a little offended. I don't know if you want to address any part of it, but they were a little bit offended about the conference. I can't remember exactly what you said about it, but maybe the fact that they think you haven't gone to any conferences or whatever. All right, that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to help us out, you can, and you can also listen to the full shows for only $2 or more a month. I'd like to think of people as supporters of the show, not so much subscribers. So that being said, you can actually listen to the full shows over at KGRA Radio. Of course, they have the commercials in them. Also, it's on YouTube. You can listen to the full shows on YouTube and on the Dark Matter Digital Network on Thursday evenings. I do want to say that, again, I like to think of people as supporters. It's only about 1.5% of the people that listen to the free show are the ones that support the show. In other words, it's a very small number of people that listen to the show are supporters. And I understand that. I get that. Why spend any money when you can get the show for free? However, we are actually in the red a bit, and it would be nice to break even. If anyone wants to jump over and help us out, that information's on podcastufo.com. And next week, Christopher O'Brien, we're going to have an in-house, in-studio guest. And I want to thank the people that help out with the show. First, we'll start out with Jordan Bonaparte, who filled in for Alejandro Rojas, who will be back next week. Unfortunately, he was sick this evening. Also, I want to thank Evan for helping in the background. Our guest, MJ Benias. And also, I want to thank Peggy for managing the Facebook page. And that's it. So remember to keep your eyes to the sky.